Cheers, ladies.
Oh, ching, ching, cheers.
Cheers.
To season 12.
Season 12.
Season 12.
Season 12.
Let's do this.
Hey there. Welcome to season 12 of She Builds Podcast, where we share stories about women in the design and construction field, one lady at a time.
This season's theme is government, civic work, and urban planning. We're talking about ladies who were involved in public projects or services.
You know the deal. We're not experts. We're just sharing stories about the information that we find as friends having a chit-chat, fun conversation. If you find an error, send us an email and we will all continue learning.
All right. On today's episode, we will be talking about Pravina Mehta, an architect and urban planner. I'm Lizzie Rahr, salsa dancing into this week in San Francisco, and I'm joined by my fellow co-hosts, Nirjiti and Jessica.
I'm Nirjiti Rivas, hitting my 10K steps in Houston, Texas.
I'm Jessica Rogers, lifting heavy, based out of Miami, Florida. I'm a gym brat, y'all.
Get it.
Brat or rat?
Brat, because I don't want to be an animal. No, but I want to, it's like a cross between Charlie XCX, like Brat Summer. Like, that's what I'm going to choose.
I see. And a gym rat?
Yeah, because I don't want to be a rat, but I'll be a brat.
Okay. All right. Today, we're traveling to India. Pravina Mehta was born in 1923 or 1925 in Bombay, India.
Choose your own adventure birth year.
Yes. I know it's very vague about her birth year, but from what I read, there are sources that put her birth year as 1923, but her sister in an interview said she was born in 1925. Unfortunately, I don't have a date at all, just a year.
Okay, I'm going to choose 1925 because it makes the math easier.
Sure.
Yeah, and her sister said so. So, a reliable source.
Yeah. Pravina's father was a lawyer who was also very involved in the nationalist movement in India. Remember, at this point, India is still under British rule, but the independence movement is alive and on the rise. Her dad was a member of the Indian National Congress, which is a political party in India that fought for independence and helped realize it in 1947.
Oh,
cool, cool, cool. Yes, it's helpful to provide this context and to see how this plays out.
Yeah. So her dad was super involved in the Congress to the point that big names like Sarojini Naidu, Mahatma Gandhi, and Jawaharlal Nehru would come and consult with her father on things related to the National Congress.
Oh, snap. Okay.
Probably most people know Gandhi, but just in case, he was an Indian lawyer and a leader in the fight against colonialism and a strong advocate for nonviolence. He used peaceful resistance in his fight for independence from Britain. To this day, he inspires civil rights movements all over the world. We have a museum here in Houston. I've been wanting to go visit it. It's called the Eternal Gandhi Museum, Houston.
Ooh.
I'll let you know in the wrap-up if I made it to the museum or not.
Cool. And Sarojini Naidu was a political activist and was also the first Indian woman to be president of the Indian National Congress. Her focus was on women's rights and women's education. Sarojini also established the Women's Indian Association.
Yes. So Pravina, as a child, was very influenced by Sarojini Naidu in particular because she was such a public activist for women's rights in India as well as independence. Sarojini became the first woman leader of Indian National Congress, as Jessica said, and it was the year that Pravina was born. And when Gandhi came on the scene, Sarojini joined forces with him.
I'm so intrigued. I can imagine little Pravina looking up to Sarojini. I hope they get to work together. I'm really curious how this is going to translate into architecture, though.
Yeah. Pravina had such aspirational figures to look up to. Well, for one, I think Pravina will become very well educated just by knowing what Sarojini advocated for.
So Pravina and her family lived in an Art Deco home in Bombay. She had a brother and a sister, Malvika. Her dad was progressive and made sure his daughters as well as his son were well educated. Her brother became a chemical engineer and her sister, Malvika, became a doctor. they went to the New Era School in Bombay, which had many socialist and nationalist teachers.
Ah, well, there you go. And I love an Art Deco building, very prominent here in Miami, especially in Miami Beach. So all of this sounds lovely.
Yeah. According to her sister, Praveena went against the grain from a very young age. Growing up, she refused to isolate during her period. At this time, it was still common in India for women to isolate or sequester themselves during their periods. And this inspired her mom and grandma to also not isolate.
This sounds really important and brave. Periods have been weaponized against women to say that they are impure, dirty, keep us away from educating ourselves and opportunities because we would have to be kept away for a week every month. That's a long time. Imagine how much we would miss if we couldn't go to school for a week every month, if we couldn't go to work. I'm so glad Praveena made such an important move and made a difference for her mom and her grandma too.
OMG. I love this. Look at Praveena aspiring at such a young age.
Yeah. Her mom and grandma would also take the girls to prayer meetings that Gandhi held. They were all part of the nationalist movement and even participated in protests and the Quit India movement in 1942.
The Quit India movement was a movement launched at the Bombay session of the All India Congress Committee by Mahatma Gandhi on August 8, 1942, during World War II, demanding an end to British rule in India.
Still a teenager, Praveena and her friend Malatiben Javeri went to a Quit India demonstration and were arrested. She and Malatiben were held in prison for 2 months.
No way. I can't imagine as a teenager spending 2 months in prison.
Yeah. At this time, there were several protests. The protests were against the British rule in India. Gandhi gave speeches, and in this speech in particular, hundreds of people got arrested instantly, including our girl Praveena and her friend.
Praveena also dressed in khadi for her whole life. This was originally encouraged by Gandhi as part of the boycott against British goods. Khadi is a hand-spun natural woven fiber. Typically, it's cotton, but sometimes it has silk or wool in it. Saris can also be made out of khadi. The idea is that khadi didn't differentiate caste, class, or religion, but it also brought back traditional Indian materials that were suppressed during British rule. Wearing khadi was seen as an act of solidarity and defiance.
Everything about this girl is activism.
Yeah, and I love it. She was proud of her culture and was so brave.
Gandhi wanted women to wear white khadi, you know, modesty and all. But women like Sarojini Naidu and Praveena chose to wear brightly colored and patterned cloth.
That's right. Wear it loud.
Praveena doesn't seem like the type that would do anything quietly, okay?
All right, so mostly we've been talking about Praveena's political and activist upbringing. But during this same time in her teenage years, she was also accepted to the Sir JJ School of Architecture in Bombay. Now, if you reach into the depths of your memory, you might recall that we mentioned this school in episode 17, Manette da Silva.
Yes, it sounds so familiar. This is where she went.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So Nirjiti's research was conflicting on whether Manette attended this school, but the research I came across said that they were classmates at Sir JJ and the only two female students at the time. So I like to think that they were friends.
That's awesome. Yes, let's proceed to think that they were friends.
Love the connection. And it's great that we learned the story of first and now of the second woman at this school.
So they were not the first women to attend the school, actually. That was Peren Jumsheji Mistry in the 1930s.
Yeah, I think we mentioned that on episode 17. If not, I remember that name from my research. It sounds familiar.
Yeah. So the school was originally started as a place to train Indian draftsmen to work with consulting British architects in the 1890s. But by the time Praveena attended, the school had developed and had a Beaux-Arts curriculum. From 1923 to 1943, the school was led by a British architect named Claude Batley. He made a point to make sure that the students analyzed historic Indian buildings and buildings of different scales, and that they needed to respond to the climate and surroundings.
At least Claude required they studied Indian buildings, culture, climate, not just British and European stuff that they could barely apply.
Mm-hmm.
Agreed. honestly, I was preparing for the worst. I was imagining Praveena to raise hell about making sure that they included Indian architecture.
Okay, so all of this timing about when Praveena started at Sir JG is a bit fuzzy. And to add to that, at some point in this time, she also fell in love with and married a classical dancer.
Oh, okay, girl.
Say what? Of course she married a classical dancer. She's such a free spirit. I can't see her falling for someone with a typical job. What was his name?
I do not know his name. But I do know that she had also been trained in classical dance and she loved it. So she would perform sometimes with his dance company.
Activist, rebel, architect. Now we find out she's also a classical dancer. She's a Jill of all trades.
Oh, love it.
Okay, it's bothering me that we don't know this dancer's name. I did a little digging, but only found one source, myheritage.com, that mentions the husband's name to be Mahesh V. Desai. But then I didn't find any info on Mahesh or other sources to prove that this was true, which is, I guess, what happened to you, Lizzie. I'm going to go with Mahesh was possibly her husband. Let's just give him a name.
It might be him. It might not.
We are not experts.
We can circle back later.
Okay.
Okay. So at some point in this time period, she and her husband, possibly Mahesh, who knows, moved to the U.S. Not sure if this was because his dance company went there, but anyway, she leaves Sir JJ and India and heads over to Chicago and enrolls at IIT.
Ooh, are you about to say what we think you're about to say?
OMG, is Mies about to enter our story?
Ooh. You know it.
Enter Mies.
You know, our boy Mies was the director of IIT at the time, so she studied under him and other former Bauhaus teachers. She also would have been there while Mies's designs of Crown Hall were under construction.
So lucky.
So jelly.
Mm-hmm. She apparently really internalized Mies's Bauhaus teachings, and years later, people who worked with her said she referred to the Bauhaus at least once a week.
I get it.
Yep. I mean, I would too.
Yeah. She graduated from IIT with a Bachelor of Architecture degree and then enrolled at the University of Chicago, where she got a Master's in Planning.
Ooh.
After she graduated, she moved to Washington, D.C., where she worked for 2 years before she returned to India in 1956.
Very fitting. This activist girl chose D.C. to practice. Was India independent by the time that she went back?
Ooh, good question.
Yeah, it was. If you remember, they gained independence in 1947.
Gotcha. Oh.
So also at some point in the U.S., she and her husband got divorced. No idea when.
No wonder there's not much mentioned about him in the research. We're done with him.
Yeah.
So she's back in India, single, getting reacquainted with the now independent India. She spends time traveling around the country to draw and photograph villages, temples, and various handicrafts. She continued to do this throughout her practice.
I wish I was doing this today.
I know, that sounds fun.
Mm-hmm. She then opened up her own architecture firm. While she had been immersed in the Bauhaus modernist way of thinking, she understood that Mies's aesthetic wasn't going to work in India, not only because it didn't respond to the climate or context like her professor had taught her, but also because it wasn't practical for this era of India. The country was still developing industrially, and materials like steel and plate glass were expensive and not easy to come by. Cement was rationed by the government, for example.
Oh, yeah. I wonder how Praveena would assimilate and merge those two principles.
Yeah. She had to figure out how to create her own version of modernism in the Indian context with traditional materials.
I wonder if she was keeping in touch and exchanging notes with Minette de Silva, because Minette was going through something similar in Sri Lanka.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure letters must have been exchanged. DMs, emails, something.
WhatsApp.
WhatsApp chat was popping.
One of her more well-documented projects is the Uma Patel House in Kihim. The house has clear modernist influences, but she still makes it work for the climate and context. The house has thick walls with windows recessed into it, which give it the feel of a brie soleil. And the house was on the coast along the sea. On the land side of the project, it looks solid and imposing and creates privacy. But once you go inside, the house opens up to beautiful views of the sea with an overhang jutting out to protect it from the rains.
Okay, that house sounds like a piece of architectural art. And after looking at pictures, I can confirm that it is. I would buy this in a heartbeat. I want a beachside property so bad it hurts.
Child, I want a piece of property. But anyway, it does. 2025 is my year, y'all. Okay.
Yeah.
That sounds so nice. And you can totally see the Bauhaus and modernist influences.
Yeah. Pravina got commissions from family and friends, mostly in her early career. But over the years, she worked on many different project types and scales. Houses, schools, factories, warehouses, etc. Unfortunately, many of her projects no longer exist.
Oh, sad.
What a bummer that most of her projects are no longer with us. So glad that at least we have pictures of the Uma Patel house. Now I wish we could see more of her projects to know how her aesthetic translated to other project types.
Yeah. So, in the 60s, Bombay had grown exponentially. The population went from around 3 million to 6 million from 1951 to 1971, which, as you can imagine, caused issues with overcrowding, sanitation, housing, etc. Officials were trying to come up with a solution. In 1964, Pravina, along with Charles Correa, another architect, and Shirish Patel, a civil engineer, came together to come up with a plan for Navi Bombay, or New Bombay, which today is called Navi Mumbai.
Ooh.
Navi Bombay was designed to be a twin city to Bombay, across the bay from it. Most proposals at this point were just trying to expand the existing city limits. This proposal wanted to create a second city that would counterweight the growing Bombay. The three of them wrote an article called Bombay, Planning and Dreaming, and published it in the June 1965 issue of Marg, which you also might remember from episode 17.
Of course I do. Minette da Silva was one of the founding members of that magazine.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so they definitely were in communication with one another.
Well, this idea caught on and the plan for Navi Bombay got approved. And Pravina and her cohort started working on this plan. They were trying to create a city of substantial size and planned out a string of nodes on a proposed area of land that would be connected by transit. Bombay at this time was the capital of the state of Maharashtra, and there was an idea to move the capital to Navi Bombay so that it would help establish the new city truly as a twin city and give it as much importance, essentially. They also planned to include a lot of low-income housing to prevent slums from developing.
I like the way that they were thinking of the urban design as a series of nodes connected through transit, and how they also included public housing as a part of the proposal, not an afterthought.
Agreed. I also like the idea of a twin city. And I mean, come on, the opportunity to design a plan, a new city, sounds so exciting.
Yeah. However, it sounds like by 1975, the idea of moving the capital was not happening. And it never ended up happening. The transit system also wasn't implemented as originally intended. So unfortunately, their plan didn't come to fruition in the way they had hoped. Navi Mumbai is still around today, but it only has a population of 1.6 million, which is obviously much smaller than originally intended.
Ugh, what a missed opportunity. I wonder what happened. I'm going to guess the plans got VE'd. It's always value engineering's fault. Enemy number one of designers.
Yeah. Or politicians just not getting the vision. Ugh, such a bummer.
Yeah. Pravina always had thoughts about what needed to be done to improve Bombay. She said, quote, "There is much to be done to improve Bombay, but this can only be achieved when there is coordination between city planners, the public, and social scientists. Architects must interact closely with social scientists in the location of housing for lower-income groups. In an environment where resentment exists due to growing disparities, the location and distribution of housing becomes an important factor in urban planning. in Bombay, where diverse groups coexist, housing, sanitation, water supply, and other facilities are not the only problems. There are social and psychological issues as well. The problems created by diversity should not be solved by destroying it, but by giving scope for the various lifestyles our culture is capable of yielding.
That's really insightful. I agree with her assessment that in a space of such diversity, it's our job to learn how to design for all of that diversity to grow and thrive. To try to eliminate it is at best lazy and at worst criminal.
It really is. I love this quote and this way of thinking.
Yeah. Well, at some point during her career, Pravina taught at Academy of Architecture in Bombay and also got remarried to someone whose name I also do not know. So maybe that's Mahesh. That's why I said we'll have to wait and see because...
She got options.
I don't know.
Mahesh number two.
Mahesh could be either of these men.
Or both. Maybe they were both Mahesh.
They could have both been Mahesh.
How common is the name Mahesh?
I don't know.
No idea.
Because maybe it is. It's like a John Smith of India or something. So they're all Mahesh, you know?
I don't think so. It was only a matter of time before she got into academia.
For real.
Once again, her year of death is unclear. Some sources show it as 1988, while her sister says she passed away in 1992.
The great resource, myheritage.com, does say 1992.
Interesting. For her birth year, it was only like off by 2 years, but this is off by a lot.
4 years, yeah. When she passed away, there was no one to take over her firm, so it closed down. Unfortunately, her drawings and office papers were thrown out after her death. However, another architect, Brinda Somaya, managed to save her architectural library.
This is some Julia Morgan crap. Women in architecture, listening, please, we gotta put in our wills that even the scrap pieces of paper are to be donated to the International Archive of Women in Architecture. Because our relatives might think it's crap, but we know it's important to process documents.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, I just volunteered the women in architecture.
I'm sure they appreciate it.
The archive. But I mean, just save your work, people. Save your work. Thank goodness for Brinda.
Yes, people, come on. I would hope that this meant that her passing was sudden, because she had to have had some sort of filing system, right? Like, I don't know. I'm trying to give her the benefit of doubt. I do agree with writing wills and estate planning. So, side note, like, I already spoke with my family. That's our goal for 2025 as well, to have done some estate planning. I never would have thought to include my sketches in my will, but I am adding it to my list. And I don't even practice, but I'm archiving my work. Documentation, people.
Well, in regards to being a female architect in a time where the profession was predominantly male, Pravina, like many of our ladies, just wanted to be known as an architect and didn't like the distinction of her gender with her profession. We've talked about this over and over again, but one of the books I found had a lovely quote from the author, Mary N. Woods, which I feel like sums up our thoughts about this. It's a little bit long, but I'll read it to you both.
I'm here for this.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. She, Pravina, came to maturity at a time when the emancipation of women was central to the visions of a modern and independent India, and yet she always insisted that she was simply an architect. Metta bristled at being called a woman architect, and she would undoubtedly object to the emphasis here on her gender. But to this, my response is that when critics and historians write about practicing architects, we too often deny the presence of women by blindly focusing on only those who are male and white. Thus, the seemingly neutral term, architect, signifies a group that is both highly gendered and racialized. In the 21st century, only one woman, Zaha Hadid, has finally entered the exclusive club of contemporary starchitects like Rem Koolhaas, Frank Gehry, Tom Main, and Renzo Piano. More troubling than Hadid's exceptional status is that today women in the West, as well as India, account for somewhere between 40 to 60% of all architecture students. But after graduation, they begin to disappear from architecture practice in huge numbers. As an antidote to that attrition, we must recover the histories of these women like Metta, who persisted and succeeded.
I feel like there's nothing else to add here. I couldn't agree more with Mary on this. At this moment in history, it's important to shine a light and celebrate women in architecture and call them out for exactly who they are and all their context, because neutrality has not been working. So the same way Pravina thought about architecture and design doing a disservice when it treats spaces as neutral instead of celebrating diversity, I can say the same thing about the profession of architecture and the people who practice it. Well, good thing I didn't feel there was anything else to add. Look at me adding.
Love it. I think Mary puts into words what we've been trying to articulate for the past 5 years, and she does it so eloquently. We shouldn't have to add female architects, female designers, female planners. We want to be known for what we do and not for what we are. We want our work to speak for itself, blah, blah, blah. Same thing that we've been talking about for the past 5 years. But the truth of the matter is that the profession is not equal. Why are little girls not becoming architects? Why aren't there more people of color? Michelle Obama once said something to the effect of, people don't know who they want to become if they don't see examples of it themselves. This is from the 2017 AA conference that was in Orlando. I attended it and I witnessed this quote. But she's talking about us, y'all. She was talking about professions like architecture. We tell these stories and we see ourselves and our future selves so that one day we don't become the first. So that one day the goal of just being an architect is just that. But until then, I am...
Hey, designers and curious minds. Ever wondered about the stories hiding within your building's walls? I'm Carrie Seaburn, structural engineer and host of Unstruct, the podcast that decodes and simplifies major concepts of structural design. Behind the math and physics, structural engineering simply predicts building behavior. Join me as we simplify the complex, making structural design accessible to everyone.
Nowadays, instead of measuring it via cost, we're saying, well, what about carbon, you know? We've got two levers now that we can, if an architect has an inefficient design, we can hit them with two levers, if you like.
The official casualty figure is 55,000. Everybody I talked to told me that the actual figure is at least three times as much. And I believe that. I mean, seeing what I saw, Turkish codes are good, and they have been improving, but compliance was completely lacking.
Fluent in steel, concrete, masonry, and timber design, I'll bring you leading engineers to dissect the tales behind their building structure. Whether you're an architect, contractor, engineer, or just love a good story, this podcast is for you.
Yeah, beam penetrations. That's a fun topic on this project.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Unstruct. From within your walls, hear the story behind how your building stands today.
I'm a Black Hispanic, XYZ, first in my name, teller of stories, breaker of the traditions. Welcome to my TED Talk. Those are all of my descriptors.
Exactly. All of the above.
Mic drop.
Oh, shit. All right. We've now reached the second part of our episode, the caryatid. A caryatid is a stone carving of a woman used as a column or a pillar to support the structure of a Greek or Greek-style building. In each episode, we choose a caryatid, a woman who's working today, furthering the profession through her work, and who ties into the historical woman of our episode. Without further ado, drum roll, please. Nithya Raman.
Whee! Yeah, yeah, yeah!
Nithya was born in Kerala, India, and moved to the U.S. with her family when she was six. She got a bachelor's in political theory from Harvard. After she graduated, she moved to India and was working in Delhi when she heard about the Yamuna Pushta eviction, which evicted and demolished a large area of slums along the Yamuna River. She was shocked by how little coverage was given to it and the disparity between how poor and rich residents were treated in urban planning. She worked for an NGO after that and eventually decided to go back to school and get her master's of urban planning from MIT.
Oh my gosh, that sounds awful. And why have we not heard about this? Also, political theory is an interesting major. Not something I would have thought of.
Side note, I actually signed up for a political theory class when I was doing my thesis semester in Syracuse. And then I dropped out after the first day. Because there were, like, so much reading. I was like, I'm not going to have time to really do this like I should.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did not know this.
Me neither.
Yeah, it's sad. Interesting. But it's inspiring how Nithya found her way to urban planning. She saw a problem and wanted to be a part of the solution.
Yeah. Well, after getting her degree, she returned to India, this time in Chennai, and founded Transparent Chennai, an organization started to empower residents by providing them useful, easy-to-understand information that can better highlight citizens' needs, shed light on government performance, and improve their lives in the city one issue at a time. This included issues like access to running water and sanitation services.
This reminds me of our living legend and charrette, Yasmin Ladi.
I wonder how the government saw this, as a resource or as a watchdog?
Yeah, I don't know. She has since returned to the States, and while living in L.A., she started a homelessness nonprofit before being elected to the L.A. City Council in 2020. She is still on the City Council today.
Now she's here!
Yeah.
She's close to you, Lizzie. I wonder what great work she has been up to the last 5 years.
Yeah, oh man, but that sounds so beautiful, taking her efforts worldwide.
Yeah. So, look her up. See what she's been up to.
And tell us.
All right. Before we say goodbye, we want to say thank you to CMYK for the music, John W., our technical advisor, and most of all, thank you for listening.
Remember to check out our show notes for links to all of our resources on this episode, as well as pictures of projects that we've talked about.
We hope you enjoyed learning about today's lady and Caryatid along with our banter, and that you're inspired to find out more about them and other amazing professional ladies.
Please let us know what you thought of our episode. If you enjoyed it, please help us spread the word. Tell your friends, your colleagues, your history buffs. Tell them all. Also, give us 5 stars on iTunes and Spotify. Write us a review. This all helps us reach a wider audience and for more people to learn about amazing ladies with us.
Your support means everything to us. If you've enjoyed our content and want other ways to help us with our mission, you can support us by visiting our website for merchandise at shebuildspodcast.com/merch.
If you don't need any more swag, but you'd still like to consider supporting the research we're doing, you can donate to us on our website, shebuildspodcast.com/donate. Or you can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/shebuildspodcast. You can also find links to all of these items on our website.
She Builds Podcast is a member of the Gable Media Podcast Network. Gable Media is curated thought leadership for an audience dedicated to building a better world. Listen and subscribe to all the shows at GableMedia.com. That's GABLmedia.com.
We are excited to hear from you and for you to come back and keep learning about bosses with us. You can email us your thoughts at SheBuildsPodcast@gmail.com. Leave a comment on our website, SheBuildsPodcast.com. Or follow us on Instagram and Facebook at SheBuildsPodcast and on X at SheBuildsPod. Bye.
Bye.
Adios.
Do you hear these kids yelling?
No.
No?
Great. They'd be crazy.